radio great again. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Donald Trump said on this video that he likes kissing pretty women and that
you don't.
Sir, let me, can I finish?
All right, it is Friday here. We are live broadcasting a very busy broadcast week for us. Very busy week as well as we're building a brand new studio. That's going to be very excited. I think Alex is really going to like that, maybe even be broadcasting out of that sometime soon. Stacked broadcast today, plenty of news, plenty of videos. We've got a couple guests today, but first, here's a report from Jake Lloyd.
Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. But when is it that a fringe rebellion motivated by light and transient causes transforms into a just fight for the rights of man against absolute tyranny? And who is it that judges this? History has dictated that the American Revolution was a righteous war fought by a people yearning to be free. But what shall history say of Catalonia? Once an independent nation, Catalonia was joined to the Kingdom of Aragon through a royal marriage in the year 1150 AD. And by 1714, she was conquered by King Philip V, in a final push of the birth of a unified Spain. Many kings attempted to impose Spanish culture upon the Catalans, but they rejected it for their native tongue and native culture. Due to their defiant, independent nature, they were given general autonomy up until the Spanish dictator, Francisco Franco, attempted to destroy Catalan separatism permanently. Upon the death of Franco, however, Catalonia regained an element of self-government, but this didn't stop the independence movement from steadily growing up until recent years, and even now. On October 1st, 2017, a referendum was held by the local Catalan government, headed up by Carles Puigdemont, in order to trigger the separation of Catalonia from Spain. It was met, however, with harsh resistance from the Spanish federal government. It was a strange scene as police, on orders from Madrid to shut down certain polling stations, formed a bulwark against hopeful voters. Catalan policemen and firefighters stepped in to defend the citizens attempting to vote as the federal police beat down those citizens who just wanted to practice their right to self-determination. Yet of the 2.2 million valid votes, over 90% of them favored Catalan independence. It seems to be the case that throughout history, Catalans have never been able to quell their desire for autonomy and self-determination. Even now, they feel that the Spanish government does not properly represent them. The tension only grows further as Catalonia continuously bears more and more weight of Spain's financial crisis. The American Declaration of Independence claims that as a government piles up offenses against the populace and further deviates from the path of preferred governance, that a people has the right to rid themselves of that government and establish a new one. Yet clearly not all revolutions are necessary or even warranted. So the question that then presents itself is not an easy one to answer. Who is it that decides the merits of a revolution? Is it the global public? And if so, should we seek their consent? Or perhaps history is the only judgment that matters as it relates to revolutionary acts? The revolutions memorialized in history are far-off dreams, entrenched in established narratives. We know that the American War for Independence was successful and just. We know that the Confederate secession was a failed attempt to destroy the Union. And we know that the French Revolution was a successful and necessary victory against the detached monarchy. And we know that the Whiskey Rebellion was something that was rightly put down by the newly instituted U.S. government. We also know that all is right in the world. The borders are accurate. The governing authorities, while perhaps needing revision, are generally sufficient. There is no need for lines to be redrawn along cultural, religious, or ethnic boundaries, and there is most definitely no need for revolutions in our modern, enlightened era.
And you can see the full report from Jake Lloyd on The Real Alex Jones Channel.
Let's is the War Room.
Welcome to the War Room. It is Friday and the conclusion of what has been a very busy broadcast week for us. And we're in the middle of building a new studio, too. So really busy here at InfoWars, and it's all possible thanks to you. And in fact, I'm even going to be a little mushy here to start the first segment because I love this crew so much. I love Alex Jones so much, Rob Dew, just everyone here is just amazing. I love the fans that I get to meet when I go out to these events, Trump rallies, what have you. I mean, it's just awesome. It's such an honor to be making history with you because that's literally what we're doing here every day. This is the stuff history is made of. This is the stuff that they write history books about, and you are part of it. And it's just really incredible to see InfoWars expanding so much, to see so many people out there so passionate and motivated to change the world for good, to become a better person, to become more awake, to become more aware, to raise their families better. And that's really what it's all about in the end. And we never claim to be perfect. We never claim to be purists. But at the end of the day, we're trying our best, and we want to change the world for good. I think everybody looks at the world with a soul and says, there's a lot wrong here that we should be able to fix. So we're actually here fixing it. Now, the big secret, folks, the huge secret that you already know and that they're lying to you about continues to be revealed. 300,000-year-old skull that looks shockingly like ours could rewrite the human origin story. Now, you've had multiple stories like this come down the pipeline in the last couple months, okay? Here's the big secret, folks. Here's the big secret they don't want you to know about. You were created by God. They want you to think you evolved from some primate or some goo in a pond. No, you were literally created by the creator of this entire world in the image of the creator. You are special. You are powerful. You are important. So when you continue to see, and I'm suspecting we're going to continue to see more stories like this cropping up. When are they going to finally admit that the story of evolution that they teach our kids in public school is a lie? Because as soon as you face the fact, as soon as that reality hits you, that you were created by God, not even to get, you know, whatever religion, not even to get religious, just the fact that you were created, that there is something bigger, more powerful out there, your entire life has changed, and you don't want to be an atheist that goes and shoots up a church. You don't want to be an atheist that is proud to abort children. You don't even want abortion to exist. You don't want to flop around in the streets and scream helplessly at the sky because you're upset over the result of an election. No, you realize how incredible of a species that you are. So I just wanted to start the show with that because we really are amazing. It's really an honor, all the people I've met, all the people I've worked with, and we're just going to continue to take things to the next level, folks. That's our destiny. That's our manifest destiny now, folks. To make America great again is just the beginning. We are going to literally change the world, and it's going to be for the better, and hopefully we can start to save some of the innocent victims out there of child sex trafficking, the brainwashing media, the propaganda, the sexualization, all of it. And that's how we can actually really make the entire planet better. Now, over there at Facebook, I don't think that's how they feel. Now, I personally am not on Facebook. I've been off Facebook for years. I think it's nothing but trash. I really don't even like Twitter. However, it is an important tool for those in media. But it's amazing what you're hearing from Sean Parker, formerly of Facebook, talking about what Facebook is doing to our youth. So let's go to former Facebook president Sean Parker. There's two of these clips. Let's start with clip 8, talking about what Facebook is doing to our children's brains.
And then they would say, no. I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value presence and I value intimacy. And I would say, well, you're a conscientious objector. That's okay. You don't have to participate, but you know, we'll get you eventually. and like, I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying. Because the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to a billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other, with it probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. It God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. You know, anxiety is a huge problem now. Of course, anxiety was always a big problem in high school. Who wasn't to have anxiety in high school? But the surveys that have been going on for years are showing a huge rise in anxiety amongst high school kids and younger. And you know, you have to wonder if there isn't some, you know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, to really understand. That thought process was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible.
And remember that Steve Jobs wouldn't even let his own children play with the iPad because he knew what it was doing to the development of their brain. But think about it. It takes Facebook and social media have taken the popularity complex and amplified it 10 or even 100 times where, and you can look at all the studies. They already have these studies. Facebook leads to depression. Instagram leads to depression. All of these things lead to depression, lead to anxiety. And you see these stories because people literally live their lives synonymously through Facebook now. So it's, ooh, I'm going to get on here and I'm going to post a picture of my food. Oh, I only got 2 likes. Oh my gosh, I must not be popular. Cindy, she posted her breakfast yesterday. She got like 30 likes. I'm just not cool as Cindy. And this is the obsession. This is the psychology. This is where the depression sits in. And then you've got people that literally, it's like social media becomes their real life. They spend more time on social media than they do in the real life. They go to a concert, they go to a ball game, and they sit there and they experience the entire thing through a cell phone. I go to concerts all the time. I love going to concerts. I love going to all events. I watch it with my eyes. I experience it in real time. And it's just amazing when I go to these concerts and I see everyone around me with their phone out filming. I'm like, are you here to watch a concert or record a concert? But here's Sean Parker admitting that Facebook is actually exploiting this psychology.
You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them to really understand it, that thought process was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom, Instagram, it's all of these people, understood this completely, and we did
it
anyway.
Don't let social media suck your brain. Don't let social media suck your soul. Come back to humanity. Welcome back to the War Room. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer. And I'm just going to take care of some news coverage here before we're joined by our guest, Scott Barger, in the next segment, radio host out of Pennsylvania. We're going to be discussing what they're not telling you about the Jerry Sandusky Penn State child sex abuse scandals. There's a lot of angles that the media is not touching that should be shouted at the top of a mountain. Very strange things going on with that. And then ironically enough, I was talking to Scott last week and then something else broke. So we're going to have all those angles with Scott Barger on the other side. It's funny how Jerry Sandusky thing kind of just hasn't really gotten much attention with all of this Weinstein gate going on, when that was one of the biggest things to come down ever when you talk about child sex trafficking. Of course, you've had all the arrests on the East Coast and the West Coast saving children. So it is all happening. You know, Steve Fechenik was on the Alex Jones Show today, and what a powerful guest he was today. Just completely right on. Everything he said is literally happening now. This is from the New York Times. Saudi Arabia orders its citizens out of Lebanon, raising fears of war. Of course, what did Pechenik say today? That Lebanon was going to be part of this new war that is developing now in the Middle East. There was another headline here. I need to pull it up. It's from RT, guys. Headline is Saudi-led strikes target defense ministry in Yemeni capital. That's from RT. Saudi-led strikes target defense ministry in Yemeni capital. So this is happening. There is a shift in power in Saudi Arabia, and there are new wars building up in the Middle East now. So everything Steve Pechenik said on the Alex Jones Show is happening in spades right now. Where should we go from here? All right, how about Trump did meet with Putin today? He said he was going to meet with Putin. And in Vietnam, Trump and Putin did meet. There was a famous handshake. The pictures were taken. And I'm shocked, though, that I'm not hearing the cries of Russian collusion on the media today. I mean, after all, there's Trump and Putin right there. What more do you need? Impeach! Where's Maxine Waters? Impeach 45! Impeach 45! I saw him with Putin! Where's Keith Olbermann? Russian scum! Russian scum! Silent, huh? Trump meets Putin today. That's good. We need a good relationship with Russia. Wall Street Journal, Mueller probes Flynn's role in alleged plan to deliver cleric to Turkey. Well, I've told you, it's my belief, I've been led to believe that the next indictments, the two sealed indictments, are going to be Tony Podesta and Michael Flynn, which should be an interesting thing because you're hearing the rumors that Podesta is trying to get immunity, and you have to consider the timing of all of this. You know that Mueller is considering the timing of all of this when he is set to announce his next indictments. Perhaps to distract from something else, steal the headlines with something else going on. We know that they love to do that. So you've got Roy Moore now. So now Roy Moore gets charged with sexual assault. And you know what? Look, it can all be explained with one story in Newsweek that I told you weeks ago. I saw this coming from a mile away. Newsweek: how Donald Trump rules America's Garden of Dicks and sparked the Me Too movement. And then, what is it? A bunch of white males and Bill Cosby in the fold. And Donald Trump, of course. And then they put this tweet out. You ever seen anything so disgusting? How Donald Trump rules America's Garden of Dicks and sparked the Me Too movement. And then you can see the cover of Newsweek magazine, a balloon that looks like Well, you can use your imagination. It's all Trump. Trump sparked the Me Too movement. No. Actually, the Me Too movement was started by a black lady that nobody's ever heard of. Actually, the Me Too movement was started after everything came out about Harvey Weinstein. Actually, the Me Too movement was started by people like Nasty Women. I can't even remember her name now. She's so unimportant. Ashley Judd. But see, here's what they're doing now. And this is the key. This is the next shoe to drop in the overall agenda. So what the establishment has done, they have sacrificed Hollywood for politics. The establishment has sacrificed Hollywood for their political agenda. Well, what are you talking about, Owen? Think about it. I mean, you know all of the names. Everyone in Hollywood now is a sexual assaulter, right? And it's reached a point of hysteria where all you have to do is say, I was assaulted by him. And then it's a story. And then it's a news story. And it's real. No jury, no judge, no court, no trial, nothing. Very few of these accusations are even leading to any litigation at all. You just say you were sexually assaulted, and then it's a story. So why? What is the deal with this? What? And I realized all of it with the Roy Moore story. They sacrificed their pawns in Hollywood in order to save their political agenda. So they've created an atmosphere, they've created an environment where all you have to do is say, j'accuse, and then you're guilty. So what happens? They're not winning politically, folks. Don't be confused by this, oh, we got these Democrat mayors, we won in these elections. You didn't win anything. You already had those seats. Nobody was shocked by those outcomes. What you did lose were the special elections. What you did lose was a bunch of seats during the Obama administration. But now, all they have to do is find their political enemies and say they are sexual assaulters. And then it's true. Then it's a story. So they sacrifice their Hollywood minions, create an environment where everyone that gets accused is guilty. And then once they have that successful infrastructure set up, then they can point the fingers at their political enemies. They can point their fingers at Roy Moore. And it's true, apparently. And now it's true. You know, he might have to resign. He might have to step down, this, that, and the other thing. Senate GOP campaign arm severs financial ties to Roy Moore. He might not even be guilty. But they're already punishing him, see? He's already guilty in the eye of the public. So now, congratulations to the establishment. This is your plan. Sacrifice your minions in Hollywood. Create an environment where all you have to do is say, I accuse you and you're guilty. And then accuse all of your political enemies. Take them out. And then try to get your political agenda back in the force. Well, we're not going to fall for it. Sorry. We're not going to fall for it. We're smarter than that. We're not falling for it, folks. On the other side, I'm joined by Scott Barger. We're going to talk about Jerry Sandusky.
Making talk radio great again. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
We're going to make America great again, people. Donald Trump's going to bring jobs, and then you're going to have work to do. It's going to be great. Now I'm being shoved and being assaulted here.
Welcome back to The War Room. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer. My guest now is Scott Barger. He is the host of Two-Way Radio Show, WRTA in Pennsylvania. And obviously, very similar broadcast to what you will get here at InfoWars. But the reason why I wanted to have Scott on today is to discuss the Jerry Sandusky, the entire story. But more importantly, the stuff that they're not telling you. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to be here.
Scott, I want to start off with the death of that one guy. I can't even think of his name right now, but a very mysterious death to someone that may have had some knowledge of what was going on at Penn State. Enlighten my audience as to that.
Well, I mean, most recently, there was this fellow by the name of Fred Anton. He was a GOP power broker here in Pennsylvania for years and years and years. In fact, There's news stories published out of Philadelphia describing him as kind of the gatekeeper, that he could kill legislation with a phone call. He just was a very powerful man. Fred Anton was CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Insurance Company, which was the insurance company that was in a legal battle with Pennsylvania State University over who should pay the $90 million in settlement fees awarded to these victims. He was found dead in a river, law enforcement telling us apparent suicide.
Okay, so we've got another strange death. Again, this is a guy from the GOP, Fred Anton, found dead in the Delaware River. Now, there was another strange thing, too. And again, nobody even knows about this stuff.
Yeah,
there was another strange thing about a missing hard drive from a computer.
Right. Years before the Sandusky thing really blew up. Now, you know, if we believe the narrative we're told, the Sandusky, this thing had been going on for years and years. But before it really blew up on the national scene, there was a district attorney in Center County, which is where Penn State University is located, by the name of Ray Grecar. And Mr. Grecar went missing in about, was it 2005? And with him, he called family, said, I'm on the way home. He never showed up. They found an empty car with no personal effects in it. They found a laptop with a missing hard drive in a nearby river. No body was ever recovered. He has been now listed as presumed dead. He's been declared legally dead now. They did recover the hard drive separate from the computer a few months after they found the computer, but it had been... the FBI analyzed it. No data could be recovered, absolutely destroyed, and the body was never found. So Mr. Grecar is gone, vanished. We have no idea what happened to him other than he's been declared legally dead. We found a missing laptop and a destroyed hard drive in a nearby river.
Now, I want to explain why these two details are important to me. I'm not trying to necessarily make any connections or conspiracy theories here, but I the reason why these two things are so important to the entire Sandusky thing is because you have to understand, Happy Valley is, you know, it's a pretty, I don't know if I'd say small town, but let's just say if you're in Happy Valley, pretty much everybody knows everyone. Would you say that's pretty accurate, Scott?
Small town. I think, you know, Penn State's my alma mater. I attended Penn State University at the main campus there in State College, Pennsylvania. I think year-round residents, it might be 50,000 people. Add on top of that another 50,000 undergrads, and that gives you an idea of how much the university dominates that small town. It's not a large place.
Right. And so stuff like this happens in a small town, and it's kind of, you know, it kind of makes you wonder. It kind of, you know, makes your ears perk up to wonder what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. This is not the kind of place that district attorneys go missing and we find, you know, dismantled computers and rivers. It just doesn't happen around here, let alone the Sandusky story as a whole. This is just, it's shocking to small town central Pennsylvanians like myself.
So I wanted to put those two anomalies out there and then inject some other anomalies. And then probably in the next segment, we'll tie it all back to Sandusky. So the story goes, Jerry Sandusky is, running this, how would you say it, charity or service or whatever for young boys that need fathers. Okay. And he's using Penn State constantly, apparently having these boys there. They're doing stuff in the shower, this, that, and the other thing. Okay, so that's the official story. Sandusky goes to jail. He still sits in jail. He still maintains his innocence.
Absolutely.
Now, here are the anomalies regarding that. You've got Mike McCreary, the big eyewitness who's changed his testimony multiple times.
Right.
You've got the victims that the only victims, I believe there were two or three victims that ended up only being involved in the court case. The others, I think, chose not to testify. And then their activity on social media is strange. They're taking pictures with new cars, taking pictures with all this cash in their bed. Strange stuff there. Won't do media inquiries. Then you've got the Joe Paterno angle. So apparently Joe Paterno knew. He didn't know. Maybe he knew. Maybe he reported. Well, it all comes out that Joe Paterno did bring it to the proper channels at Penn State. He did address it. And at first, the NCAA said, oh, Paterno's just as guilty. So they removed his wins. They removed his statues.
Right,
and they character assassinated him. oops, he dies. Now all of a sudden, oh wait, Joe Paterno did tell the proper people and they reinstated his wins. Then you've got Louis Free, who wrote the Free Report, which has plenty of errors in it. And then he gets caught in some scandal, caught up like a year later. Louis Free, I think, even lost whatever title he had. So there's right. just all of these crazy anomalies here, Scott.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, and here in this area, Penn State University is probably as close to a religion as many people in this area would follow. I mean, Penn State and Penn State football, Joe Paterno was as beloved an individual that I think I have ever encountered. And I think that plays into this, that people could not believe that he would know. They could not believe that he would have been told. And in fact, to kind of loop this back around to what we were talking about earlier, part of the story was that these allegations were brought to the attention of the district attorney at the time in the late 90s, who is this Mr. Grecar. And he determined there is not enough evidence here for us to bring any kind of formal charges against Mr. Sandusky, and he dropped it. That was, I believe, in 1999.
Now, think about that, too. So now you've got a situation, Grecar no longer with us, conveniently, and then Anton, who would have been the one, I guess, to follow up, investigation, where you just follow up with the people that received the insurance payouts, no longer with us either.
Right. And then he just for your added enjoyment, Owen, Mr. Grecar had a brother. Ray Grecar was the district attorney. His brother, Roy, also committed suicide by jumping in a river.
Wow.
That was 4 years prior. So that was in the mid-90s in Ohio. He was found in the Miami River. And it's just, you know, I don't want to jump to conclusions that aren't warranted, but this, you know, the bodies start to stack up. Questions aren't answered. Allegations start to appear to be flimsy. And really, in central Pennsylvania, we have effectively brushed this under the carpet. We don't talk about this anymore because Penn State's having a great football season. We're glad the program's back. We love to see those touchdowns. Meanwhile, we've got a guy in prison. We've got, you know, think about this, though. Not only is it $90 million in settlement money, but the total tab for this whole fiasco to Penn State University, $250 million, $250 million by the time you add up settlement fees, court costs, all the fines from the NCAA, all of that. We're talking about $250 million. That's a lot of motivation for some unseemly behavior.
So here's the deal. We are about to go to break. My guest is Scott Barger. He's going to be with us on the other side. We're going to try to kind of bring all this together. But I will say this. My theory is that there is a bigger cover-up happening here. How is it that one man goes down for this, Jerry Sandusky, but apparently he's got all of these kids. Apparently multiple people knew what was going on. And then Jerry Sandusky just conveniently takes the fall for it. And then all these other people involved either wind up dead or have some other strange anomaly occur. So we're going to get into all that on the other side with our guest, Scott Barger. Don't go anywhere. Our guest is Scott Barger. He is the host of Two Way Radio Show in Pennsylvania on WRTA. We're talking about what they're not telling you about the Jerry Sandusky case. I was just doing a little research here in the break, Scott. I didn't even know this. Louis Free was appointed to the FBI by who? Bill Clinton.
There you go. There you go.
Well, wow.
Okay, so the hard drive. Okay, just to give you an idea about how, you know, this is more than just maybe a random B&E where someone takes a computer and tries to get some information off of it. The FBI, the United States Secret Service, as well as a firm by the name of Kroll OnTrack, which deals with this kind of, you know, data recovery. They, by the way, successfully recovered data from a hard drive recovered from the space shuttle Columbia after that disaster. All three of these organizations completely incapable of getting any information from this destroyed hard drive. On top of that, local law enforcement, when searching when searching the home, found that the computer, the home computer, had been used to search for things such as how to destroy a hard drive, how does water damage a laptop. So that's all found in his home after the fact. Okay, so with that, these are things that we know for sure. This is police record. This guy's gone. He's disappeared. We have no idea. We haven't seen him in over 10 years.
So, again, we're pointing out all the anomalies around the Sandusky case that they never report in the media. Nobody's ever heard this stuff. All they hear is Jerry Sandusky molested a bunch of kids through his charity.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying Jerry Sandusky did or didn't molest those children. What I believe is that there is a larger cover-up taking place here. That's what I believed happened. Because if you think about it, why would you have all these anomalies? Why would you have people winding up dead in the river? Why would you have people erasing hard drives? Why would you have the anomalies with Joe Paterno, where in the free report, it says Joe Paterno did, in fact, report these things to the proper channels, but then they act like Paterno is guilty anyway? How could all of this be going on? And then the larger question, I think, that really begs for answers. How is it that Jerry Sandusky, one man, you're telling me that one man organized this entire charity simply for his own benefit so he could molest children? I don't know. Something screams of a larger cover-up here.
When you read the stories of eyewitnesses, when you hear their accounts, when you see how they testified and what they told law enforcement during the investigation, their responses always struck me as off. Not the way I would respond if I happened to be walking by a shower in a kind of, you know, not public, but this is a locker room of a sports team in a major university. People are around all the time, and I walk by and happen to see an older man molesting a child, and what I do is walk away and tell my boss. You know, that no one directly tried to intervene to save anyone.
Right.
It just seemed way too convenient. To me, I'd want to intervene. I'd want to do something.
Yeah,
to,
like knock him out?
Maybe, at least, you know, to do something. But no, in each case, it just, the response of people who were saying that they were seeing this thing, it just never added up to me. So that either speaks to a hole in their story or maybe to a larger cultural problem of not wanting to see this for the evil that it is.
Well, and now you have Louis Free making statements as little as just 6 months ago saying that basically, you know, everyone at Penn State knew this was going on. Everyone at Penn State should have been fired, and that all these people are criminals hiding this, you know, child sex trafficking deal. But how is that? But that's what I'm saying. Why would all of these people be covering up for Jerry Sandusky? If everyone knew this was going on, what interest is it of theirs to protect Sandusky? Who is Sandusky? Nobody even heard of Sandusky.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't officially working for the school for, you know, the years prior. He had an honorary position on the football team for the years prior to his indictment. You're right. This is a lot of heat to take to protect one guy in his misdeeds. If it was one evil person,
and even to keep him around.
Yeah. It just doesn't add up to me. Now, we've talked before, Owen, about the culture of secrecy in this area. I've mentioned the Altoona Johnstown Diocese. I'm not making a connection that these two events have anything to do with each other than to point to a culture of secrecy that seems to be existing in this area. The Altoona Johnstown Diocese was, in my estimation, guilty of the worst cover-up of the systematic abuse of children within the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. And this is well-documented public record grand jury indictments of what was going on in that organization. There's something at work larger than just one rogue evil person who can't control their evil appetites. There's something more. I think you're right. I don't know what that is. I don't know who's benefiting from this, but it just smells like more than just one guy.
No, I completely agree. And a lot of people like yourself who have done the research into this are really just left begging for questions more than getting the answers. Of course, you had Sandusky's son also get arrested apparently for a child porn. So there's that kind of wrinkle in time as well. But to me, when you see this story, when you see the ever-changing testimony of Mike McQueary, when you see the fact that, I'd have to actually look at the numbers, I can't recall, but most of the people that they wanted to bring forward as eyewitnesses were victims didn't do it. They just didn't. They didn't go there. And then the few that they did, I think it ended up being three of them that received the big payouts, go on social media bragging about how they're getting all this money for these payouts. You got Louis Free, who's investigating the whole thing, a Bill Clinton appointee. I'm, you know, just pointing out the facts here. It just screams to me bigger cover up. It screams to me something else is going on here.
You know, it does, and it's shocking, I think, to most Americans to think that how could this kind of cover up happen? How could there be this kind of plot? But remember, we're talking about a lot of money here, man. This is not just a small case with a small amount of money. We're talking about $250 million that it cost the university, over $90 million of which is settlement money. This is not a small cash sum. And to me, that looks like a lot of motivation to do all kinds of things when you're talking about potentially paying out $250 million to defend yourself, speaking for the school here, from these allegations. This is a lot of money.
And when you remember how big of a story this was, you would think, I mean, this was the biggest story on every network, every sports network, every news network for weeks and months. But no one ever talked about Fred Anton. No one ever talked about the hard drive missing from the laptop. Nobody ever talked about this stuff.
Well, remember, that stuff all went down years before the Sandusky story blew up. And so locally, it was kind of a shocking, interesting story, this mysterious case of the vanishing DA. What happened to him? They don't know. All they found was the computer. It was this kind of intrigue, and a lot of people talked about it around the water cooler. Wow, this kind of stuff doesn't happen around here. Fast forward a couple of years, the Sandusky thing blows up, and people are reminded, wait a minute, this is the very same district attorney who said there wasn't enough evidence to bring charges against Sandusky back in 1999, and now he's vanished, and all we have left is a broken laptop and a destroyed hard drive.
It really is incredible when you look at everything, and then, you know, I try to also take it into perspective with everything we're seeing now coming out of Hollywood, everything we're seeing now about the children that are being rescued from cages. I mean, infants being found in some of these child molestation rings. And it just, folks, it's just not that simple to me. I mean, it's just not that simple that one guy is doing this all for his own benefit, running this charity, hanging around Penn State when apparently people have reported him before. Nothing, it just doesn't add up to me. I think that there's a larger cover-up happening. I think all of it is tied into the larger cover-up, the missing hard drive, the dead DA, the changing testimonies, the witnesses not coming forward, the fact that Sandusky still says he's innocent. I mean, this guy still says he's innocent.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's all just it's honestly, I think there's just more questions than answers, but it's in the past now, so no one's going to talk about it anymore. But
I guess not. But I tell you, I agree with you. At the very least, the explanation we've been given is not satisfying to me.
Yep. I would agree as well. Now, Jerry Sandusky obviously didn't make any claims to any other cover-up, so perhaps that means that he is involved in something and he doesn't want the bigger goose to fry. But it's strange, and there were some developments. I actually forget, there was some story that I sent you that was some strange development on this case. I can't even remember what it was that I sent you last week. But it's very strange, and with all the stuff coming out of Hollywood, with all of the pedophiles being revealed now, I think that it's time to start talking about this again and asking the question, was there a bigger child trafficking ring involved with Jerry Sandusky and in Happy Valley? Certainly begs the question. Scott Berger, absolutely. Two-Way Radio Show, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, my pleasure, Owen. Take care.
All right, there goes Scott. And on the other side, it is the second hour, so you know what that means. We're going to be joined by Roger Stone. Don't go anywhere.
This is the return of the Republic. And this is the War Room with Owen Schroyer
and Roger Stone
at Infowars.com/show.
Well, the topic of discussion in the last segment piqued Rob Dew's interest, and he found this story from Business Insider in November 2011. He just brought this to me. Shocking Penn State rumor, Jerry Sandusky pimped out young boys to rich donors. And then, actually, I'm glad that he brought this into me because this actually kind of ties some of these loose strings together. It talks about how and we talked about it in the last segments. Sandusky was essentially forced out of Penn State in 1999, this article is alleging. And then that goes back to the investigation that was going to be going into Sandusky around that time, but he was never prosecuted because they said they didn't have enough evidence. But around that time was when you had the dead DA and you had the missing hard drive from the laptop. So perhaps the cover-up had already happened in 99. And then the second cover-up was when Sandusky became the fall man for the entire operation. Very, very interesting stuff here. But it would make sense to me more if the case was Sandusky was using this organization, the Second Miles Foundation was the name of it, to pimp out young boys to rich donors. That would make more sense than Sandusky himself just being one man doing this all for his own sick, twisted desires. So I'm not the only one asking these questions. In fact, these questions were brought up years ago. So pretty amazing, isn't it? Pretty amazing what they won't tell you in the mainstream media. And there is something about Mark Madden from WEEI in Boston, who apparently this story was taken down, Rob was telling me, from the original source. He was ahead of the Jerry Sandusky story the second time around. So I'm not saying he knows something, but he obviously had his finger on the pulse of this story. And the entire Sandusky thing really looks to be a cover-up, folks. So you want to talk about the pedophiles in Hollywood? You want to talk about the child sex trafficking rings that are being brought down now? Let's not forget about the Jerry Sandusky case. And let's not think for one second that they weren't covering up something bigger. Because that's, to me, what this looks like. And it all makes sense now. It all checks out when you consider all of the evidence. I was going to go to a Mark Dice report, but we just don't have time. So, guys, please support us at InfoWarsStore.com. Are we still running all these 50% off specials, guys? We must be crazy. We must be crazy at InfoWarsStore.com to give you these specials. We're just giving this stuff away, pretty much. Super Male Vitality and Super Female Vitality, 50% off. Biome Defense Probiotic, 50% off. Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 50% off. Secret 12, Vitamin B12, 50% off. Super Blue Fluoride Free Mouthwash, 50% off. The groundbreaking DNA Force is still 25% off. And you can still take advantage of 50% off all InfoWars apparel. All InfoWars apparel, 50% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. So get to the InfoWars store, take advantage of all of these specials before they're up and before we sell out of these products. But if you don't have an InfoWars shirt yet, now's the time. Go pick one out. We've literally got dozens of designs. You'll find one you like. And this is how you support us. This is how we launch to the next level. And this is how we politically kick the corrupt politicians and establishment right in the groin by shopping at InfoWarsStore.com and expanding everything we do here. We're still waiting for Roger Stone. He'll be joining us this hour. Don't go anywhere.
Is the War Room.
Well, they say Trump is ineffective. They say Trump's a clown, a bad leader. And they have their Tokyo Roses of the Democrat Party get in the media and tell you that the Democrats are winning and Trump is losing. Well, that's not true. In fact, here's a compilation of everything that President Trump has accomplished.
I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed, I hope. You'll be looking at me in a year or 2 years. Let's give me a little bit of a time to to run things.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
Within minutes of being sworn in, he was at work.
An executive order to start the rollback of Obamacare.
President Donald Trump has just signed an executive order to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal.
President Trump saying this morning that for every new regulation that's written, two have to go.
Following through on one campaign promise, his vow to institute a five-year lobbying ban for all departing members of Congress and their staff.
This is a five-year ban. So you have one last chance to get out.
And this is the protection of the nation from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. We all know what that means.
The chaos, confusion, and anger growing in the wake of President Trump's immigration ban.
Judge Robart's decision, effective immediately, effective now, puts a halt to President Trump's unconstitutional and unlawful executive order. I want to repeat that. It puts a
Supreme Court victory for President Trump. The nation's high court cleared the way yesterday to reinstate key aspects of the president's travel ban.
To strictly enforce a ban on refugees.
The president signed his order to begin the process of building the border wall.
I'm a builder. That's what I love to do. That's probably what I do best.
Well, the beginning stages of President Trump's border wall in South Texas are reportedly underway.
Of illegal aliens across the border in the last 6 months or so, but certainly post 20 January, is down by 70%.
But Trump is the wall.
God bless the USA.
You are fake news. Oh!
NASDAQ topped 6,000 for the first time ever.
More than 2,000 points since the election.
It's like a party down there today, Lori.
It is another record finish for the Dow Jones Industrials.
Small businesses, as of just now, are booming.
The unemployment rate at the lowest level since May 2001.
This is a level that most economists and, frankly, business leaders consider to be full employment.
And we've picked up in market value almost $4 trillion.
In the first 2 months in office, Trump reduced debt by $100 billion.
Asking everyone watching tonight to seize this moment, believe in yourselves, believe in your future, and believe once more in America.
He became president of the United States in that moment. Period.
The Trump administration's plans do not stop here on Earth. It also has a very ambitious and very Trumpian plan for space domination.
Congress took formal steps on Thursday to establish a dedicated fighting force for space.
Our nation will return to the moon and we will put American boots on the face of Mars.
Dire threat from North Korean state media to start your weekend off.
Take the toughest counteraction against those who have provoked us.
We are sending an armada.
I think what happened in Syria is a disgrace to humanity, and he's there, and I guess he's running things, so something should happen.
The U.S. has reportedly launched dozens of cruise missiles at a Syrian government target.
And we had the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen.
Doesn't that undermine...
Very fake news.
I know, but aren't you...
The largest non-nuclear weapon ever deployed.
Great. I mean, thumbs up. This is Donald Trump reasserting us on the world stage as the superpower that we are.
EPA awards $100 million to Flint water crisis recovery.
Today, I am keeping another promise to the American people by nominating Judge Neil Gorsuch.
I have concluded that I cannot support a man with his views for a lifetime seat on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is the most important judicial...
66 days since he was nominated by President Trump, Federal Appeals Court Judge Neil Gorsuch was confirmed.
You say that you have a unique personality that is capable of doing the impossible.
That's very interesting. I agree.
Drive them out.
NATO members must finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations.
We have turned a corner, and European defense spending has now started to increase.
Oh, oh, this is the way we bow.
Did y'all see President Trump push his ass out the way?
It was a very, very successful trip.
As the VA is on the path to recovery.
He's set to make a major announcement on whether the United States will back out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
The United States will withdraw.
USA! USA!
And I hope everybody right now is going to get back to this.
First Lady Melania and First Boy Barron have officially moved into the White House. And look what's in his hands. It's the hot new craze called the fidget spinner, which are so popular with boys.
Republicans have won all four House special elections to replace appointees to the Trump administration.
Even the New York Times corrected a story this week in which it also falsely claimed that all 17 intel agencies agreed on Russia.
More people watch Nick at Night cartoons than CNN today.
The era of strategic patience with the North Korean regime has failed.
What are we doing right now in terms of North Korea?
You never know, do you? You never know.
We will never back down.
They see me rolling, they hating, patrolling and trying to catch me riding dirty.
Our two nations are forever joined together by the spirit of revolution and the fight for freedom.
Locals in parts of southern Syria are enjoying relative peace for the first time in 6 years. That was made possible by a Russia-US brokered ceasefire deal in the region.
Across the border today, Iraq's prime minister declared victory over ISIS in Mosul.
The best-armed, most dangerous terrorist group in the world has lost its biggest city. The self-declared caliphate, the so-called Islamic State, is no more.
Separately, there's word that President Trump is ending a CIA program to arm and train moderate rebels in Syria. On Wall Street, tech and healthcare stocks fueled a day of record highs across the board.
6 months in, the left is mired in hate.
Not tired of winning.
Let's hope hate loses.
You're at the War Room, and I'm your host, Roger Stone. I'm going to try to make some sense for you to exactly what's happening at CNN. You see, AT&T is seeking to acquire Time Warner, which in turn owns the formerly respected news organization, now a rogue propaganda front for the Clintons and, of course, the Obama administration. It was generally thought and reported right here at InfoWars that the Trump administration would approve the merger, and that would allow the new management at AT&T to bring broad and badly needed changes at the cable news network, the epicenter of fake news. This would have included the termination of the employment of Jeff Zucker, not to mention fake tapper Don Limon, and of course Anna Navarro, Brooke Baldwin, and a host of other talking heads who spew a round-the-clock avalanche of anti-Trump venom. Now, however, as InfoWars has exclusively reported through the reporting of Dr. Jerome Corsi, a rogue element in the Trump Justice Department, in an effort to save CNN, is demanding that it be spun off. Well, this effort to spin it off is nothing more than an effort to preserve CNN so that a Bezos or a Soros or some other os can come along and buy the cable news network, which is not about the news, and use it as a propaganda instrument. I actually have a report of the President of the United States in a social occasion telling people that he expected that there would be personnel changes under Chairman Stephenson of AT&T if the merger went through. So now you have it. What you have is a rogue element within the so-called Trump Justice Department, which is a deep state Obama-run operation. Yes, there's no question whatsoever that Attorney General Jeff Sessions is a captive, that he is regarded like a child, that he is cosseted, but most importantly, that none of his orders or directives are carried out. He has capitulated control of the DOJ negotiations and has abandoned any efforts to protect the interests of President Donald Trump. I'm delighted that you can join us here on the War Room today. I want to remind you, however, that freedom isn't free and that we are just not blessed with a phalanx of billionaire financiers lurking in the background and anxious to write multi-million dollar checks. We survive here. We expand. We are the cutting edge of the revolution, simply because you have been loyal enough to go to the InfoWars.com store and support us with your consumer dollars. And you know, whether it is the T-shirts that are 50% off now, including the very popular Paul Joseph Watson T-shirt, the Clinton Rape T-shirt, the In Your Face InfoWars T-shirt, the Trump-Pence 2020 T-shirt, these are the true catalysts for First Amendment action. CNN is fake news. How'd you like to wear that and walk up to fake Tapper on the street in New York City? Or the In Your Face InfoWars T-shirt, my personal favorite. So you can help us. You can help yourself. You can help the revolution. And you can help the expansion. If you like the 10 hours a day that you're getting in new program, if you like seeing whatever necktie Owen Scheuer is going to wear on any particular day here on the War Room, well, then go immediately to the InfoWars.com store. Whether you're getting some of our phenomenal herbal supplements or whether you are getting books, T-shirts, or other First Amendment-oriented products, you are helping finance and fuel the revolution. Did you notice, Owen, that a stepped-up presence in Somalia, where the Trump administration is now using drone attacks against al-Shabaab after learning that the Islamic insurgency, the al-Qaeda offshoot in that country, has been illegally purchasing uranium from Iran?
Interesting. Uranium, the Clintons, uranium, proxy wars, the Middle East. You're saying there's a connection there, Roger?
Well, what I'm saying is that the Iranians are in violation of their deal. I believe that President Trump is looking for any and every excuse, pardon me, to deep six that deal. And here you have, in Somalia, a country that is not does not have mountains, does not have caverns, does not have forests. It is perfectly flat. That means that our satellites and all this expensive technology that we have spent with our tax dollars on, we're able to see exactly where the Somalian rebels are and eradicate them from pinpointed drone attacks. So the Trump administration appears to be stepping up to the plate on this international challenge. But I have reason to believe the president now knows that the Somalian rebels are selling to Iraq in violation of the uranium deal that has been, as you know, most lucrative for them since the Obama administration essentially was downloading pallets of cash to these pirates based on the flimsy excuse that, no, we're not going to use any of this technology for warlike purposes. We just like to have, you know, nuclear-powered vacuum cleaners.
Well, and the one thing that I think President Trump is doing differently than the Bush and the Obama administrations is there appears to be an agenda to actually win, to actually get something done, to actually find a situation where we can stop the fighting, whereas the prior administrations, Roger, it felt like they just wanted an endless war. There was no end to it. It feels like Trump is actually seeking an end.
No, I think that's exactly what this entire Russian collusion fraud is about. Hillary Clinton promised the boys at Langley and the folks at the Pentagon an expansion of the proxy war in Syria, perhaps even a no-fly zone. Gee, that could lead right to World War III. How profitable for our globalist friends like Soros. And Trump, therefore, was not only the law and order candidate, he was also the peace candidate. And that is why the deep state is so determined to destroy his foreign policy. You see, war is very profitable for them and their friends. Anyway, folks, I do want to ask you one more time to go to the InfoWars.com store. Extraordinary specials right now. Grab your brain force. I'm about to pop two, so I'll be ready for the next session. Owen Scheuer, Roger Stone, you're at the War Room. Don't miss the next segment. We're going to tear it up.
With Roger Stone at InfoWars.com/show.
Welcome back. I'm Roger Stone, and we're on a war footing here at the War Room because I have breaking news. Only minutes ago, the negotiations between my attorneys and attorneys representing Twitter broke off, and Twitter has now inexorably refused our demand for an apology and reinstatement. That's why on Monday, I will file a federal lawsuit against Twitter on multiple grounds, including antitrust, First Amendment issues, and others. No, this is not a running bluff. AT&T was represented by the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. They also had special counsel in the firm of Ketchum and Fleesum. But we are not impressed with their white shoe Ivy League lawyers. We are prepared to go into a federal court in a lawsuit, which I must tell you will be underwritten extensively, if necessary, by a number of other communications giants. Shortly after I file this lawsuit, I have every reason to believe that Milo, my good friend, will be filing amicus in the case, as will others. We're coming for you, Jack Dorsey. A judge will order you to reinstate me, and we have losses. You see, I have paid Twitter for paid promotions, and therefore you have violated the contracts of that deal. We're going to take your Ivy League heinies to court, and you're going to lose. So look forward for the details. Vanity Fair, Business Insider, BuzzFeed, Salon, all of those who thought this was an empty bluff, we are going to DEFCON 3, and we will see the Twitter pukes in court.
I cannot wait, Roger. I'm so excited that you have chosen to take up this battle, Roger. I salute you.
Well, look, we tried to have honest and reasonable negotiations, but the bottom line of this is, whether you're talking, Owen, about CNN or you're talking about Twitter, how is it that these incompetents can run these communications giants and lose money? That's the whole point I think people are missing about the AT&T, Time Warner, CNN drama. Jeff Zucker is a boob. He's an incompetent. They are losing money hand over fist. There are millions of more people watching Infowars.com than are watching CNN. There are more people watching, as Mr. Gorka said, the Nick at Night cartoon reruns are getting bigger numbers than fake Tapper. You see, people see Jake Tapper and they see through him. They should have a flashing thing that just says liar on and off because it's so transparent. Jake, you can't even fake sincerity. Not good for a television host. And the arrogance that exudes from these people. The only person over there who's actually a decent human being, I think, is Van Jones. Now, I'd prefer his cousin Alex Jones better, but Van Jones at least is a cordial human being when you meet him, even though he has whacked out pro-communist ideas. At least he's not a punk. Like, say, Don Lemon is a punk.
Limon.
For example.
Limon.
Limon.
Limon. Yeah, okay.
No, somebody told me a great story about Don Lemon. A group of people went to dinner in New York, and at the end of the dinner, the waiter came around and said, "Would you like dessert?" And Don Limon said, "Yes, I'll have some of the sorbet." And someone else at the table said, no, that's sorbet. And he says, no, it is not. It's sorbet. He puts the word tard in the word libtard.
Don Lemonhead.
You know, so look, I liked Twitter. It was lively and you had to get your bon mot into 140 characters. But I will own Twitter soon. This is going to be an exciting fight. Look, it's not like I don't have enough issues on my hands. Yesterday, I'm happy to say that my friend Alex Jones made a $10,000 contribution to the Roger Stone Legal Defense Fund, a fund set up by my friends to begin to defray the costs of a witch hunt that has turned my personal life upside down. Not only do I have to deal with the nonsense in the House Intelligence Committee, but now I may have to deal with nonsense in the Senate Intelligence Committee, where Senator Mark Warner has defamed me in a way that would certainly be actionable if he wasn't hiding behind his congressional immunity. And therefore, I have to ask patriots to go to stonedefensefund.com. That's stonedefensefund.com. I don't like having to ask for help. But these reports you see on the internet that Stone is worth $20 million, $40 million. Salon says, how outrageous that he's asking for help. No, it's not outrageous. I'm most grateful for the many patriots like Alex Jones who have stepped forward and written large checks or small checks. You know, the $25 contribution is deeply appreciated. Owen, I do want to tell you that when I was in Naples, these two young ladies were very, very excited that I was there. Very excited. They said they knew me from InfoWars. They were giggling. But the reason they were excited is they said, Do you really know Owen Scheuer? He's so dreamy, one of them said. Dreamy. And I said, yeah, I shook his hand just last week. Oh, my God, you must not even wash your hand, she said. Well, I do wash my hands. But, Owen, you got a lot of fans out there. A lot of fans out there on the Liberty Trail.
Wait a second. You're not fake tappering me here. That's a real story?
That is a real story. There's a lot of people who are catching on to the war room. More and more people talk to me about it every day. You're coming up with tasty neckwear like today. I think helps your image. When we tell them that Michael Zimmerman personally has endorsed Super Male Vitality, this stuff moves off the shelves, which is a good reason for one more time to tell you that there are extraordinary savings going on at the Infowars.com store. And in truth, the synergy between Super Male Vitality and Anthroplex really does turbocharge your life, and I strongly recommend it. And if you met these two girls in Naples, Owen, you might need some of this yourself. These women adored you.
Well, I'd love to make their acquaintance sometime, and it sounds like they're smart, so they probably take Brain Force. They probably take Super Female Vitality, too. And you know what? Actually, Roger, I don't know if you heard my intro to the show today, but I actually talked about how much I love our audience, how much I love Alex, how much I love you, how much just I love the fact that, you know, we never claim to be perfect, we never claim to be purists, but damn it, we love this country, we're sick of liars, and we're taking country back, we're taking this planet back for good, Roger. That's the true story here.
No, what you say is absolutely true. Look, I have not lived a perfect life. I've made more than my share of mistakes. But this is not about us. This is about the fundamental freedoms of America and the globalists, the Bushes and the Clintons and the neocon ilk that have run the country into the gutter. And we are on the verge of a renaissance. We are on the verge of a turnaround. And we have the right leader. They just seek to undermine him and co-opt him at every turn. But it is unthinkable without InfoWars. We really are the tip of the spear. This is not to take anything away from Breitbart or the Daily Caller or Town Hall or Gateway Pundit. But we are the tip of the spear, and we need your help to continue the expansion. I'm Roger Stone. Owen Scheuer, riding shotgun, will be right back. My school is insane. Hey, man. My work's down the drain. Hey, man. Well, she's a total blam blam. She said she had to squeeze it, but she unleashed it. Welcome back. I'm Roger Stone, and yes, you're on the War Room. Oh, and the hat I'm wearing was given to me by the Hungarian Association of Cleveland after Ronald Reagan's historic re-election in 1984. This is a recognition of my own Hungarian-American background. Indeed, I had relatives who were mowed down by Russian tanks in the streets of Budapest in 1956. That's why the insinuation that I am working with the Russians to collude in the 2016 elections is an extraordinary insult. No one hates the Russian system more than I. No one hates communism. Indeed, I was attracted to American politics by the anti-communism of Senator Barry Goldwater. I remained in politics because of the ardent anti-communism of Governor, later President, Ronald Reagan. And I can tell you firsthand, Donald Trump didn't need help from the Russian state to beat Hillary Clinton. In many ways, Hillary Clinton helped beat herself. And we managed to nominate the one person, the one Republican, the one potential nominee who could actually beat the vaunted Clinton machine. So if you have never had Hungarian food, Owen, I'm going to have to take you out sometime.
Well, you're constantly changing. You're shifting scenes. You started out in the Wild West. Now you're in the corridors of, you know, somewhere on the East Coast, I think. It's amazing. Where in the world is Roger Stone, and what will he have on next, is what the world is wondering.
Well, I'm at an undisclosed location in South Florida, and I like to mix it up, but there is no question that the president's trip to Asia, while so far very successful, I'm deeply disturbed by the administration's position regarding Catalonia and Spain, in view of the fact that it comes after the administration's position as to keeping troops in Afghanistan. And as we reported exclusively here at InfoWars only weeks ago, General H.R. McMaster tried sleight of hand to get the president to sign off on an option memo that would have allowed General Mattis to send as many as 50,000 troops to Afghanistan. This would have been our largest deployment there ever, at a time when we are supposed to be winding down our involvement as one of the precepts of Trumpism. Disturbing,
well,
but not surprising.
I think that the Trump trip to Asia was very successful, Roger, for multiple reasons. But I think the biggest thing to me, and most people probably won't even see this, the reception that Trump got from these nations was so welcoming, so warm, and so heartfelt. It really shows, and it should show the people, that Trump isn't the isolationist, you know, the callous individual that they try to paint him as on the fake news media, but that actually he's endeared himself to these nations. They're appreciative of President Trump and what he stands for, and the fact that the Americans finally put a real man in office and not just some, you know, puppet essentially, or some no gooder like Obama, some bum like Obama, where China, last time Obama went to China, they didn't even roll out anything for him, not even a tarmac, not even a set of stairs. Trump comes in, they roll out the red carpet, they get thousands of people out on the streets, they're waving flags. That is illustrative to me, Roger, that America is back, and the world is happy about it.
I couldn't agree more. This just in, evidently, former Vice President Joe Biden, speaking openly this morning on MSNBC about his plans to challenge Donald Trump. Now, this guy is truly, truly creepy. You'll recall when he flamed out of the 1988 presidential contest after being caught red-handed plagiarizing a speech by Neil Kinnock, who was a British politician. I heard a great story very recently about the former vice president showing up at a Dover, Delaware casino where they have a very, very popular early bird buffet, kind of an all-you-can-eat arrangement that is quite popular with some of the senior citizens in that part of Lower Delaware, and it's so popular that there's usually a substantial line that goes out the door and around the corner, and of course they open the doors at 5. Who should come rolling into the casino, into the dining room, and go directly to the head of the line, despite the fact that there were at least 50 people who had been waiting patiently, but former Vice President Joe Biden. And when he went to the front of the line, the person who was, in fact, on the front of the line, tapped him on the shoulder and say, "Hey, bud, get to the back of the line." Whereupon the former vice president said, "Don't you know who I am?" To which the response was, "We know exactly who you are. Get to the back of the effing line." You see, that's the kind of arrogance, the kind of elitism that Joe Biden, who grew up in and lived in a multi-million dollar mansion in the Greenville area of Wilmington, but tries to pass himself off as a good old middle class Joe. If you like the percentage of interest on your credit card, you can thank Joe. He and his brother, the lobbyist, and his son, the lobbyist, did the work of the Delaware banks to make sure you pay through the nose. Joe's son, the late Bo Biden, attorney general, a major drug user, and his other son, a lobbyist, another drug user, while Joe is a drug warrior. Lock them up. And in fact, as attorney general, Bo Biden was locking people up while he was snorting cocaine. And then sadly, we learned that on his deathbed, his own brother was canoodling with his wife. That's why my friend Tyler Nixon will be publishing a book called The Biden Crime Family, which will be out, I believe, in January. Keep an eye on creepy Joe Biden. While we're keeping an eye on him, he doesn't seem to be able to keep his hands off of children and younger girls. Quite creepy, Uncle Joe Biden.
Yeah, it's actually Uncle Grandpa Joe, because Roger, his daughter-in-law is now dating his other son. I can't even remember this story. It's one of the strangest stories that you'd ever heard. Or no, I think it was Joe Biden's deceased son's wife is now dating his other son that's still married. And Joe Biden said that he thought that that was all okay. But we've only got you for a minute and a half yet left here, so we can talk about creepy Uncle Grandpa Joe later. They think Joe Biden is going to run for office. You've been saying Michelle Obama was going to run for office in 2020. Donna Brazile's going on television doing interviews, and every time she does this, she gives a nice warm remark towards Michelle Obama every time. And I started noticing that, and I was like, maybe Roger's onto something with this Michelle Obama thing. What do you think? Biden, Michelle, which way you think they're leaning here?
Look, I honestly don't think Joe Biden is a viable candidate. He is a viable candidate only in his mind. It is not incidental that every time he has attempted to run for the presidential nomination, which is at least twice, he has crashed and burned. I want to be absolutely clear. I have been unequivocal in my prediction here at InfoWars.com that Michelle Obama will be a candidate for president of the United States, is the presumptive favorite, that the machinery of the Democratic Party is controlled by her husband, not by the Clintons, and that at least on paper, Michelle Obama would be an extraordinarily strong candidate. And of course, if she was elected, it's not clear that we would yet have our first woman president.
You know, I'm glad that you said that. Barack Obama, the first black president that was half white. Michelle Obama, the first woman president that's actually... Well, we'll leave it right there. Roger Stone, thanks for joining us.
Owen Scheuer.
All right, folks. Roger will be back with us next Monday, as usual.
This is the return
of the Republic.
And this is the War Room with Owen Scheuer
and Roger Stone.
Wolf Blitzer, Anderson Cooper, Chris Cuomo, Fake Tapper, Don Lemonhead, Anna Navarro. These are the names and faces of CNN. Wow, what a pathetic group of pukes. CNN is ISIS, said Alex Jones. CNN is very fake news, said President Trump. And now Rodney Howard Brown has said CNN is a wicked globalist organization.
You know what's just happened now with the release of the Kennedy files? Now, there were multiple shooters. which we knew all along. It wasn't just somebody from a book depository window. Absolutely not. He was taken out because he was going to shut down. Even though he was a Democrat, he was going to shut down the private central banks. And he started to print his own money, and they couldn't tolerate that, and they put a bullet in him. And so we were plunged. He was going to withdraw all the people out of Vietnam. He was going to bring them out, shut down the Vietnam War. They didn't want to. The money power wanted war. That's how they make money. All these wars are nonsense. It's men that are greedy making money off of the war machines. And America's become the industrial military complex. We're not in Afghanistan because we're fighting terrorists. We have ISIS bases all across America where the CIA brings terrorists and trains them and ships them out to the foreign field. We're in Afghanistan because we're running the opium of the world. Please, we're in Syria right now because of a pipeline they're supposed to go through there. Iraq had nothing to do with the Twin Towers. Osama bin Laden was a CIA operative. People don't even know these things. They're oblivious to it, and all you do is sit and suck on the breast of CNN every day. What a wicked organization. What a wicked, wicked globalist organization. My God, may the Lord bring that thing to nothing. What a bunch of nonsense pumped through the airwaves every single day, pumping propaganda into the lives of the people. And I don't even know what your local news is doing, but it's probably on the same scale of propaganda. And so we begin to see God begin to do some changes here. And I know, I'm going to say something to you right now. There are people in South Africa, you don't like the president. There's people here in America, you don't like the president. But let me tell you something about the president. The president was not part of the cabal. He was not part of the secret societies. He didn't take the secret oaths. And God brought him as a wrecking ball to wreck the system. That's why the Pope came out against him. That's why former presidents came out against him. That's why the world's financial elite in Davos, Switzerland came out against him. Why? Because he's wrecking the globalist agenda as we speak. So 2015, went back to D.C., and we did exactly the same thing. I walked every office of the Congress and the Senate myself. 2016, went back, and we were back now, 2017. And on the last day of Celebrate America, by supernatural, it was supernatural. Suddenly, my wife and I found ourselves in the Oval Office. And they'll put the pictures up, and we got to lay hands on the 45th President of the United States and pray for him and pray for protection. That's my hand, my wife's hand. And we prayed supernatural protection. We said, Father, be about him as a wall of fire. Let no harm and evil come nigh unto him. If the enemy digs a ditch, he'll fall into himself. And I just pray in Jesus' name that you give America one last opportunity. Let me tell you, the Clintons, Bush are personal family friends. So I'm going to say this. I know probably people are going to get upset because all you've heard is what the mainstream media have said, but it's not like what you think. Let me tell you, it's absolutely not what you think. And the president actually plays with the media like a cat plays with a mouse. So that's his distraction while he does something else. And he's setting back the globalist agenda probably 30, 40 years. That's why they're freaking out right now. That's why they're upset.
Great video there from Rodney Howard Brown, who has been on the Alex Jones Show in the past. Folks, Trump knows what he's up against, okay? Trump knows the evil that he's up against. Trump knows the establishment that he's up against. Trump knows all of it. He knows damn well the adventure, the journey, the challenge that he has embarked on. And he knows that he has the American people behind him. And trust me, when he has people that pray for him, like that moment that Brown was talking about, he really appreciates it because he knows the evils he's up against, folks. Brandon Tatum, our guest on the next segment. Don't go anywhere.
Let's make talk radio great again.
This is the War Room.
Welcome back to the War Room. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer. Final hour here. Our guest is Brandon Tatum. You can find him on Twitter at The Officer Tatum, on Facebook at TatumBug34, YouTube BTCruiser34. And I want to talk about the Texas shooting and more specifically gun control with Brandon Tatum.
who has experience as a police officer. Brandon, when you start to hear the gun control debates rear their ugly head after these shootings, I'm curious, from a police officer's perspective, former police officer, and then, you know, being around police officers, you know police officers, you probably talk to them still, what is the take from most police officers on the issue of gun control? Because, you know, you guys are the ones that deal with this stuff firsthand.
Yeah, I think it's a broad spectrum of thought, but the basic principle is that any police officer would choose a person who is armed, who has training, who know what they're doing, who is a law-abiding citizen. We'd rather you have a gun and be able to protect yourself than for you to be unarmed and us have to pick up your body after somebody's hurt you or somebody's killed you. So I really do think as a police officer, we are 100% behind people who own firearms, who are legally owning firearms, and people who are well-trained and who understand the ballistics of firearms and who understand what they mean for them and their own personal safety.
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, obviously, you know, the police officer is the good guy with the gun that we wait for at the scene of a crime. So it would make sense to, you know, have a good guy there on the scene already or yourself, you know, armed at the scene. So that you're saying that, you know, kind of helps police officers.
Well, yeah, it helps us. It makes situations easier in certain circumstances. But we want people to realize that we are responding to help you after the fact. Unless you're just one of the luckiest people in the world and we happen to be on scene when somebody's robbing you, trying to kill you, trying to stab you, unless you're that person, then we are responding to assist you. We would like to be proactive policing, but we respond to things after they've already happened. So we would love for our family members and other people to know, like, look, you're going to call us, but you need to have a level of defense. You need to defend yourself until we can get there, until we can show up on the scene, until we can set the record straight, until we can get everything figured out. You have to have that buffer where you can defend yourself either tactically or in the best case scenario is if you have access to a firearm and you have training in firearm retention. That's your best bet.
So is this the type of debate that goes on between police officers after events like this, or is it just kind of already understood that this is how you guys feel when you have these events happen? Does it, you know, reaffirm this stuff? What is that like? What is the response within police units when these terrible tragedies happen?
Yeah, like for instance, like the one that happened in Texas. I mean, the way I look at it as a police officer is that thank God that guy had a gun. Thank God he had a rifle. Thank God he had a little bit of training, because we weren't going to be able to get there in enough time to stop him from moving to the next location. Hopefully we would have been able to intercept him. Hopefully we would have had a good, you know, take on where he was driving, what direction of travel, what vehicle he was in. But if we, you know, barring all that information, thank God for a citizen who acted quickly and who took care of business and was able to eliminate the threat before we can get there. So we have these conversations in law enforcement, and responsible people with firearms are our best friends. People who are irresponsible with firearms, who have firearms illegally, are people that we do not like. And that's the reason why we're employed.
Yeah, you know, it is an amazing story that there was a man there with the training, with the proper firearm, that was able to, you know, it appears like subdue this shooter before it got even worse, and it could have gotten a lot worse. So it's not about, oh, you know, we all, woo, we're in the Wild West, everybody has guns. No, this is a tool. This is a tool for protection. This is a tool to protect yourself from bad people. That's why we have guns.
Right, exactly. I carry my gun everywhere I go. I got to have my gun on me right now, everywhere I go. If somebody crack up, somebody act up, I can take care of business. I can protect people that are around me. You know, I can get the scene secured before police respond, and then we can go about it appropriately. But I would never want to sit and be in a situation where someone pulls out a gun or someone attacks somebody I love or somebody I care about, one of my coworkers, and I'm just helpless. I'm waiting to be next. That's not going to happen to me. I'm going to carry a firearm legally, appropriately, with the proper training, and I'm going to take care of the people around me and make sure that I go home safe every day.
Yeah, and you know that word, helpless, that's really what it is. I can't even imagine being in that church the helplessness, knowing that there's just, you know, nothing you can do without probably losing your life. You think about the Vegas shooting. Same thing. I mean, you're out there, and obviously this is a different situation. You don't even know really where to fire a firearm necessarily in a situation like that. But still, you know, just the helpless feeling. There's nothing you can do. You're powerless. You're totally powerless in a situation like that unless you have your firearm. And that's why when I was reviewing so much of the footage from the Vegas massacre, I can't tell you how many times I picked up audio of someone saying, man, I wish I had my gun. Oh, I wish I didn't leave my gun at home. Oh, I wish I brought my gun today. That's an instinctual response you have.
Right, exactly. And I'll tell you what, there's been times where I left my gun at home and I get out in the public and I'm like, man, I think I need to drive home to get my gun just in case something happens. You know, I couldn't live with myself if I was at a situation or in a scenario where a person pulls out a gun and he's getting ready or she's getting ready to assault people in the crowd who are helpless. And I had to sit there and watch it occur and run for my life and cower in a corner. That is never going to happen to me. I'm going to stay armed and I'm going to make sure that I can go home safe and protect other people. And that's, I would suggest anybody, even people in my family, I tell them, you learn, get trained on it. Don't just go buy a firearm, don't know how to use it, but get trained on it, get you a firearm. Therefore, you would never be in that situation where you have to cower. And if you go out, you're going out with a fight.
No, and that's true too. I mean, training is very important. I mean, you need to know how to use these tools. Obviously, it's a weapon, so you need to know how to use it properly. And it's funny that you think about that. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. The inner city of St. Louis and East St. Louis is notoriously known for violence, robbing, there's stabbing, stuff happens. But I know that, you know, if I'm going to go downtown, I can be armed. I can have my firearm on me and I'm going to be able to protect me. I've had situations I know where I've had friends that got robbed at knife point, friends that got robbed at gunpoint. Actually, the new mayor of Missouri's wife got robbed at gunpoint. She wishes that she had a gun at the time. When I was down visiting Brazil, if you walk through some of the bad areas of the favelas, you're not allowed to have a gun. You're helpless out there. I mean, that's not what America's about. That's why we have the Second Amendment.
Right. And one thing that I want to impress upon viewers is that, you know, it's a good thing to have a firearm. I think a lot of people that have never touched a firearm before, to hear all these horror stories, they're afraid of guns, as if the guns can kill people on their own. The thing is that we need to get into a position in culture where we're no longer afraid of firearms, where we can get to a position to go to a gun store or something, be trained on a gun, have access to it, you know, shoot it a couple times, see if it's something that's appropriate for you, see if you can handle the pressure of doing that, and for us to not be so afraid of it. You know, I tell you the truth, before I ever owned a firearm, before I was a police officer, I never had a firearm, never shot a firearm before. I was a little intimidated by it, but when I became a police officer, we trained on it, we shot several rounds, I became proficient and comfortable with it, and it's no longer a scary thing. It's like carrying my keys on me, you know? I have it at all times, and I'm very comfortable with it, and I hope that other people can get to that point.
You know, it's such an important point you just made, because we've actually had people from the government, the United States government, say that they have to brainwash the American public into thinking differently about guns. They have to brainwash the American people into being afraid of guns. And that's what they've done. And I've actually seen this firsthand. When we were at the Refuse Fascism rally just last week, you had hundreds of citizens out there armed, well-armed, with rifles. No one got shot. None of the firearms went crazy and started firing off. That's not how it works. In fact, it was a very safe event because of that exact reason. So don't be afraid of guns. This is part of our culture. It's not a bad thing. It's a safety thing. It's a power thing. We'll be right back. Brandon Tatum is our guest. At the Officer Tatum on Twitter is where you can follow him. And I've actually seen firsthand exactly what Brandon is talking about, the same anti-Trump rally last week. I had a few guys that were armed that were kind of acting like security. I had one guy who I asked to be there for security, and then there were a couple guys that were kind of following me around to make sure everything was cool, and they had firearms. And we were walking down the block, and they were all open carrying their rifles. And these four, I would guess college-age girls, younger girls, started walking towards us, and they were literally so scared of the guns, they walked to the other side of the street. They literally said, oh my gosh, there's guns here. Let's get away. I mean, unbelievable that someone would be that brainwashed, but that's exactly what Brandon is talking about. Now, before we go back to Brandon, I want to mention he's got a beautiful Gadsden flag behind him. Wow, where could you find a flag like that? Oh, InfoWarsStore.com. How about that? The Don't Tread on Me Gadsden flag from InfoWarsStore.com. I'll actually tell you something. I've made it a new tradition. Every Christmas, I get my father a new flag. I've got him American flag. I got him the 1776 flag. I got him the Gadsden flag. I think I got him the live or die flag. I can't remember, but these are great gifts. These flags are awesome. Great decorations, great background if you're doing, you know, Skype videos or YouTube videos. We've got all kinds of flags at InfoWarsStore.com. Does that count for the 50% off apparel, guys? I'm not even sure. We've got 50% off all apparel. I'm not sure if the flags actually count as that. It does not appear, but they're actually really, they're really cheap anyway for such a high-quality flag. Honestly, it's a very good quality flag. But folks, check out InfoWarsStore.com. That's how it's all possible. Flags, water bottles, water filters, air filters, all InfoWars apparel, 50% off. 50% off like half the store right now. They're not going to last long, so get to the store before these specials are exhausted. No, Brandon, everything you said in the last segment is absolutely true. The story I told you about those young girls, I couldn't even believe it. Can you believe that someone would be that scared at just the sight of a gun that they would, and then it's like, what are you going to, walking across the street is going to make any difference? You know, it's like, that's the brainwashing though that you're talking about. That's the mindset in people where they're just so afraid of a gun.
Right, right. I call it the Call of Duty mentality. Like, you know, like people are living in this fantasy world, like this video game world, where they, death is not something that they can wrap their minds around. Guns, or they have these fantasies about all this other stuff. But we need to get our people, we need to get our young people into reality mode. You know, people will kill you. You know, they need to understand these type of things. They need to understand that they need to be protected. Police are not going to fly out of the air and appear when you need them. You know, by all means, I was a police officer for 6 years. Please call the police. We'll do our best to get there. But people need to get into reality. You know, guns are not going to hurt you unless there's a person behind that gun who can pull the trigger. And young people need to get off of their little island somewhere and get into reality. Go and try out shooting a gun, try to figure out that thing, and not just live a life of being afraid of something you never tried.
Yeah, and I think that the gun issue is one example that can actually be applied to a wider range of topics where most people that don't like guns or think there needs to be more gun control or are scared of guns have never tried shooting guns. They've never been trained on guns. They've never had, you know, a father or mother or grandfather or whatever that liked guns that showed them and talked to them about gun culture and gun history. So it's like somebody saying, oh, I don't like steak. Steak is gross. I'm not going to eat that steak. I don't want to be sitting at a table with somebody eating steak. And you're like, well, have you ever tried steak? Well, no, but I've heard that steak is not good. Well, here, why don't you just try this filet here and just give it a try. And then they eat it and they're like, whoa, steak is awesome. I love steak. And then they have steak for dinner every night.
Right, exactly. It's just like guns. They're customizable. You know, I obviously have an AR, and then I have a Glock that I keep on me at all times. But they make smaller guns. They make guns that come in different colors. If you know, whatever fits you, there's probably a firearm out there that's comfortable for you to carry. And if you just try it out, I tell people, go to the gun range, give it a try, see if it's something that you can that fits in your lifestyle. See if it's something that you can carry comfortably. See if it's something that you want to try out. And you know, I could suggest it till I'm blue in the face, but it's going to have to come down to the person's personal preference. I think that we all should carry firearms, but at the same time, give it a try before you knock it.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, just being trained on this, knowing the truth about it, is definitely the starting point for this. I want to go in a different direction here, Brandon, before we let you go. I'm sure that you're privy to all of this stuff, the Weinstein Gate, this Kevin Spacey, Louis C.K., all this stuff. Now everybody just gets accused. But I'm kind of stunned by something, and I'm not stunned by it, but I'm shocked at the fact nobody's willing to call this out. So everyone is reporting on all these sexual assault allegations now. It's widespread. It's wide ranging. You can just accuse any Tom, Dick, or Harry, and then they're guilty. Strangely enough, though, Brandon, with all of this stuff coming out, all of the allegations against Bill Clinton, all of the sexual scandals from Bill Clinton, somehow untouchable. No one wants to mention it. It's like he doesn't exist.
Yeah. It was funny. It's funny during the election time. You know, people were so, and you know, going crazy over Donald Trump. Oh, Donald Trump said this. Donald Trump said that 11 years ago. And I'm like, these same people who are crying and falling out on the ground about Donald Trump, they were willing to have Bill Clinton go back into the White House. He got pretty much evicted from the White House, got his whole family thrown out because he messing around and doing stuff he wasn't supposed to be doing with women. And he lied about it. So the fake, you know, anger in certain situations is just troublesome to me. I think you should keep the frustration all the way around. And they don't do that.
That's what it is. I like that. I'm going to steal that from you. Fake anger. It is literally fake. It's not real. It's totally made up. It's disingenuous. And the antithesis of it is based on fake news. Wow, that is actually a very excellent point that most people can understand. Brandon, thank you so much for joining us again. As always, follow Brandon on Twitter at the Officer Tatum. And we'll be in touch. We'll see you again soon, Brandon.
All right. Thanks for having me, man. I'll see you later.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to go to break here on this Friday. And I'm actually about to sign off because what I want to play in the next two segments are from today's Alex Jones show. And it was so timely and so accurate, Steve Pachinik today on the Alex Jones show, that I felt that it was definitely worth replaying. Folks, everything that Steve Pachinik said on the Alex Jones show is happening in real time. And I've had, you know, private conversation with Steve and talked about other stuff that ends up being right all the time too. But this is very key because we literally get the guests that know what's going on. This isn't conjecture. This isn't rumors. This isn't talking points. This is people in the know with the experience, with the connections, with the contacts that know what's going on. So you're going to hear in the next two segments, Steve Pachinik today on the Alex Jones Show, breaking down what's happening in Saudi Arabia and the new war that is being waged in Yemen and Lebanon. You're not going to want to miss this, folks. This is key intelligence. For me, I sign off. Stay classy, Info Warriors. Steve Pachinik, Alex Jones on the other side.
It's time to take a stand.
This is the war room.
There's going to be a war in Lebanon between Hezbollah and the Israeli army. I predicted it months ago. Unfortunately, it's coming true. Once again, that incompetent young man from the White House, Jared Kushner, went over to Saudi Arabia, talked to another incompetent young man named Mohammed bin Salman, who's never been in the army, created a war 2 years ago with Yemen against the Houthis, and because Saudi Arabia is surrounded by Shiites and Iran, and they lost, and because 3 weeks ago, I couldn't even announce on your show that Syria beat our troops and beat ISIS.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, the former president of Facebook admits the plan is to dehumanize you, make you depressed, and totally control you. We also have their own internal documents admitting this is key information. And it ties in with all the big pushes to microchip troops, not just for PTSD, but part of signing up as Sweden moves to make folks that are going to be traveling on the trains and buses take microchips. And USA Today says you will take it. ABC News says you will take it. Imagine, I told you 20 years ago they were going to try to make it mandatory. I think the Bible told us 2,000 years ago. The Bible. Get today's news 2,000 years early. So a lot going on. It's coming out that at least one of the Roy Moore accusers works directly for Hillary and for Jones, who is the Democrat candidate for Senate there. This reeks as a political hit job of the Republican establishment trying to hold on to power, going after them as well. But I wanted to get Dr. Steve Pachinik on. We haven't been able to have him on as much because the hurricane devastated Florida. He's been working on that. But now he's joining us to get into what's happening currently in the world, what he sees happening in Korea, what he sees happening in the Middle East, what he sees with the different policies of Trump. But I got to say this. He was on, I guess, about a month ago, and I was talking about how the generals and General Kelly, namely, chief of staff, were in the news blocking all InfoWars and Breitbart news getting to the president's desk. But it was also other news as well. And that I was really upset about that. And you know, he made the point that, well, you got 70 employees. The president's got thousands. And if I need to talk to you, I usually have to call one of your crew members, you know, not just you because you're busy. And I understand that. And I understand they had leaks. But now, in hindsight, Kelly has gotten a lot better, actually, on a lot of policies. And Trump has actually gotten more effective in some ways. So I think the proof is in the pudding. But larger than that, I've set up what I'm doing in Austin, Texas. People say, why Austin? Because my family's from here, you know, before California invaded. And I've got my own operation. I'm trying to change the world from kind of out here in the wilderness. And we've been effective, not in the swamp. I don't want to be part of the camp followers. I don't want to be in the swamp. I don't care who's got the presence here, Jared Kushner or Stephen Bannon or any of this. I've had plenty of chances to go have meetings with all these bigwigs and stuff. I haven't done it because it's just kind of sycophantic in a way. Of course, you get a lot of big inside stories and things like that. So when I've been upset at Kushner or I've been upset at Bannon or I've been upset at, it's about policies and ideas, or Kelly for that matter. But I'm not in the cult of D.C. I'm not trying to be part of it. I'm not trying to swim around in it. When I go after somebody, it's because I'm upset about policies and I want them to know I'm upset and the American people are upset. It's not so I get a seat at their fetid table. I want Trump in there to dynamite the D.C. system and try to restore our republic and kick some of these arrogant people out. But that said, Pachinik has said that he thinks Kelly's a pretty good guy. And I think so far, there's been some propaganda out there by people that do really want their lobbying organizations in the White House. And so it's internal power struggles. And then some of the things going on in the White House get exaggerated, really in power struggles. And I just want to signal and telegraph, I'm not part of D.C. or Capitol Hill or White House power struggles. It's like when Fox News years ago did a New York Daily News interview and said, Alex Jones tried to get a job with us, but we refused him. An unnamed vice president said, I refused three shows with Fox. They wanted me to fly there every Friday, tape shows on Saturday that would air Sunday. No way. No way. Just out of hand. I have a family. I am so proud that I refused the big radio network deals. And then I did all the other stuff and the TV show deals. That's really what I'm proud of. So I just want to telegraph that to everybody. I built my operation myself. Didn't do it with daddy's money. Didn't do it like Kushner, which, you know, more power to you, bro. I'm not trying to be at the trough, okay? I don't want to hang around in New York. I don't want to hang around in D.C. Horrible vibes. I want to be out in the hill country, away from everybody. So understand, I don't want to be in your club. I don't want to be in any intelligence agencies. I don't want to be, understand? I wouldn't join any organization that would have me. You understand? So I want to just telegraph that clearly to everybody. I'm self-made, and I'm proud of that, and I'm a maverick, and that's the way it is. And I piss on Hollywood, and I piss on D.C., and I piss on all of it. It's disgusting. It's like some ugly, disease, snaggletooth, pus-filled woman with 14 diseases telling people I want to have sex with them. It's a damn lie. Excuse me. There you go. I'm going to be a good boy here. Anyways, let's get Dr. Steve Pachinik on, because I mean, you know, he I have to say, he got real mad when I was criticizing Kelly saying that it was just all internal fighting garbage. And so far, he's been proven about 80% right. We'll see what happens, because Kelly's getting better and better about stuff. And I think what I've been told is kind of woken up to what's going on and has gotten more hardcore. Maybe he got his sea legs. But I want to get into all this with Dr. Pechenik. Also, Congressman from Florida, Gates, says that basically they're trying a coup against the president and shopping a coup against the president up there on Capitol Hill. We'll play that clip coming up. So, Doc, there's a big waterfront to cover here, but what should we tackle first?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, but you and I can disagree and we'll always be friends. The real big issue and why I can't go on the internet is I'm being hacked. Like you, I too am being hacked. Google demonetized me, and the Israelis and some Americans understand what I'm about to tell you, and they're not happy about it. What I'm about to say, and I'm cutting to the chase, is that there's going to be a war in Lebanon between Hezbollah and the Israeli army. I predicted it months ago. Unfortunately, it's coming true. Once again, that incompetent young man from the White House, Jared Kushner, went over to Saudi Arabia, talked to another incompetent young man named Mohammed bin Salman, who's never been in the army, created a war 2 years ago with Yemen against the Houthis. And because Saudi Arabia is surrounded by Shiites and Iran, and they lost, and because 3 weeks ago I couldn't even announce on your show that Syria beat our troops and beat ISIS. And so what's happening is there's a lot of distraction going on the domestic side in order for you and me to avoid what the real issue is, and that is Lebanon will be put into play. And once again, Israel will probably attack Hezbollah, while the head of Hezbollah, whom I have known about and I've worked against Hezbollah and I worked with Hezbollah, is going to fight the Israeli army. And this is what they don't want me to say to you. That's why I can't go on the internet. That's why they won't allow me to publish a lot of things. But they clearly signaled that they're going to war with Iran.
Well, sure, let me be clear, and I'm glad we got you on. They're like picking people up that are guests on the show now, the FBI is. I mean, I know you've been called in to federal court as well about the show, but this is getting serious.
Yes, that's correct. The FBI and I do not get along because from the very day that I had to deal with the FBI in the Hanafi Muslim episode where 150 hostages were taken hostage in three different buildings, the FBI nested up so badly that I was brought in. I was sworn in by the prosecutor, Earl Silver. I took it over, and then I said to the FBI, you had a bad behavioral profile. You didn't know what you're doing. You couldn't rappel from the helicopter. You were not any good. You're incompetent. Since that day, they know exactly.
And all I want is stability and peace. But let's talk about, from Dr. Steve Pechenik's sources, and, of course, he's worked for different agencies and the State Department and best-selling author with Tom Clancy and a lot of other things under his belt. He's given us a lot of good information over the years. What's currently happening? I mean, they're admitting that there's about to be a new war in the Middle East and that all these machinations are going on and that we see a lot of the older line globalist connections kind of being severed. We see them trying to modernize in some ways. I mean, what are the positive areas about the new people in charge? And then what's negative and what's really behind the helicopters blowing up and the firefights? And I mean, reducing this down, what's currently happening in the Middle East that they don't want in our news?
That's right. What they don't want in the news is the fact, number one, we lost the war in Syria. We had spent trillions of dollars. Obama had sent over $500 billion or moderate, you know, terrorists. It was a total nonsense created by the CIA, Panetta, Petraeus, and all the nonsense in the war in Syria. Syria eventually won. That means Russia, Iran, and Syria were the dominant powers. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Israel lost. In turn, what they're doing right now is that the young prince, who was really incompetent and started a war in Yemen against the Iranians supporting the Houthi, his name is Mohammed Salman, as you said. But the key person here is a name called Harari. I knew his father. He's the son, but he's the president of Lebanon. The Harari family was always beholden to Saudi Arabia. So the young prince called him back to Saudi Arabia because Harari has a Lebanese passport and a Saudi passport. But it's a very bad sign for Harari to remain in Saudi Arabia because basically he's held hostage. What that means, in effect, is that Saudi Arabia and Israel wants to designate all of Lebanon as Hezbollah empowered country, and that's not true. You have Falangists, you have Shiites, you have Sunni, you have Druze. It's a very complicated area. When the Syrians were in there, they were able to maintain peace. But now Saudi Arabia is surrounded by Syria, which they lost to Iran. You have Iraq, where we lost it to Iran. Saudi Arabia is on the
eastern border. I understand. If you look at this geopolitically, under Obama and what's happened the last 8 years, we have absolutely lost the Middle East, but some would argue that was a strategy of destabilization and globalists selling out the United States, because you and I were talking 8-9 years ago about how this was destroying, you know, U.S. dominance and also putting bad people in charge. So how can we see what's happening and then just say they're incompetent? I mean, this was done on purpose. They funded the Arab Spring.
Correct. Well, we're not putting in jail the Muellers, the Hillary Clintons, the warmongers, the people in the CIA.
Sure. So what's about to happen as this war escalates?
What's about to happen now is what? But Bibi Netanyahu has just been indicted. He, his wife, all of his friends, all of his cabinet have been indicted by the Israeli judicial system, basically saying you're so corrupt. So you've got internal problems in Israel, you got internal problems in Saudi Arabia and Lebanon. What Israel is going to do is attack with the permission of America, because for the first time we announced, and nobody's heard it, a full-time base in Israel with American weapons, meaning we have missile systems and airplanes there. We never had that before, and we kept that quiet. But for the first time, it was never covered in the newspapers. We publicly announced we are with Israel, and we will fight whomever Israel fights. Now, Israel forgets that in 2006, Bibi again incompetently went into southern Lebanon to attack Hezbollah, and he failed. It was a war that was supposed to take over for 3 days. I found out.
Sure. Hezbollah was dug in and had light anti-tank weapons and took out their...
Exactly. And they took out the equivalent of what we consider in America at a 30-to-1 ratio. In other words, every Israeli soldier is the equivalent to 30 Americans in number. They took out about 35,000 dead Israeli soldiers in equivalent numbers. And it was a failure. And once again, Bibi's going to go in there, and the Israeli government's going to mobilize the IDF, and they will fail again. This time, Hezbollah is fully, fully armed. And more importantly, the Hezbollah fighters are part of the Lebanese army. They're no longer terrorists. It's nonsense to consider them terrorists.
Well, the bigger issue is now, as you said, those corridors have been open now with the ongoing wars in that area. And so the Iranians have brought in their Revolutionary Guard and heavier weapons, reportedly. So this could get really, really bad fast.
It's going to get nasty. And it's not only going to get nasty, it has no legitimacy on our part. We have no national security interest in the Middle East with regard to Iran. Iran has done nothing to us.
Well, let me ask you this. Who do you think's advising? Do you really think Trump is listening to Kushner?
Yes. No question about
it. Well, I've learned in the last couple of months, Trump's really turned on Kushner. And I don't like getting in the middle of this. I don't even like knowing this stuff. But you see it in the news now, but I knew months ago that Trump is very angry at Kushner over...
He may be. I have no qualms about that. But what I'm saying to you, and you're right on many things, but Roger Stone said this well into 2 months ago, that there would be an impending war in the Middle East. He never elaborated. Now, what I'm saying when I came back on, number one, they want to make sure I don't get on the internet or video. This is not by accident. This all happens intent.
No, I understand. Well, then let me ask you this. We'll come back to the next segment. You can talk about whatever you want.
Yes.
What do you make of blowback and information on Vegas and this mental patient tried to kill his command? They put him in a mental institution. He escapes. They don't file the paperwork that he's not allowed to own a firearm. I mean, this whole thing smells.
Yeah, but this is where you and I may differ. It again has the footprints and the heavy footprints of the FBI all over it, because every time you look at one of their profiles, it's the same dynamic with Sandy Hook. The guy was mentally ill, he escaped, and then they blow up the building and make sure there's nothing left. This is the incompetency of what I consider to be a Stasi agent.
Sure, what do you make of the Sandy Hook, Adam Lanza documents the FBI released?
It was nonsense. They had to overcome what I was saying and you were saying, because I knew very well that the psychiatrist whom they hired at Yale was just paid off.
I know, but it's so in the new documents that Lanza was working with the CIA.
Oh, no, it's nonsense. The whole thing was nonsense. And what it shows to you is that we're waiting.
Are you saying the FBI stuck that in there? Are you saying the FBI stuck? You understand the documents the FBI released, they say Lanza was visited by the CIA and recruited by him. Is that the FBI sticking that in there to go after the CIA? The
FBI has it. Let me put it this way. The FBI is a totally corrupt, dysfunctional organization created by a cross-dresser homosexual who tried to manipulate presidents whom I worked with and was detested by Nixon, by many others in the system. What the FBI is now is a dysfunctional organization, as personified last night, where the head of counterterrorism was found drunk. What I'm about to...
You've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs.
Only Rosie O'Donnell.
And they said that wasn't politically correct. Who cares? You haven't been called.
I have the right.
Go back to Univision. I think Jeb is a nice person. He's very low energy. I'm not used to that kind of a person. Throw him out. Throw him out into the cold. Don't give him their coat. No coats.
L-Y-I-N apostrophe. Lying dead.
I have never seen a human being eat in such a disgusting fashion.
The most dishonest human beings. These people right here. Look at all the cameras.
So disgusting.
This socialist slash communist.
Crazy Bernie. He's crazy as a bed bug.
Who, Pocahontas?
The Indian.
Very offensive.
I'm sorry about that. Pocahontas?
Crooked Hillary. Crooked Hillary, Fox. She's been crooked from the beginning.
Crooked Hillary.
Politicians are really dishonest. Yeah.
Donald Trump alleges that my dad was involved in assassinating JFK.
This had nothing to do with me, except I might have pointed it out.
This guy was sweating so badly.
Thank God he has really large ears, the biggest ears I've ever seen, because they were protecting him.
I'm trying to be nice. You know, I'm working hard to be nice.
He was begging for my endorsement. I could have said, Mitt, drop to your knees. He would have dropped to his knees.
He put glasses on so people will think he's smart. It just doesn't work. You know, people can see through the glasses.
I'll make three or four major speeches. He makes a speech for 15 minutes. He goes home.